everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. Now, I have a great program for you today. It's all about changing your leadership style to fit what's going on in the business world. Now, research shows that today's organizations need a new set of rules to effectively steer the changing workforce. Before, a leader's ability and talent were the focus in today's organizations, but now leaders need relational skills like developing trust, harnessing motivation, and clarifying a vision. And as you know, listeners, the Love Doctor, I'm all about relationships and relational skills. Now, my guest today is Eric Wright, president of publishing at SCB Marketing. For over 25 years, he has taught leadership and management seminars on four continents, served on various economic and development visioning councils, and authored hundreds of articles and three books. His latest book, co-authored with Jeff Pearsall, is called Dogs Don't Bark at Parked Cars, Your GPS in an Era of Hyper Change. And you can learn more about Eric Wright and his book at dogsdontbark.com. So welcome to the program, Eric. It's great to have you with us today.
It's great to be with you, Terry. I'm really excited about today's discussion.
And this is so wonderful because we're taking relational skills and putting them into a different arena. But before we get started on the topic today, tell us a little bit more about you. What's your background? And what do you do as president of publishing at SCB Marketing?
Well, believe it or not, for 25 years, I was a senior pastor of a rather large church. And actually a series of churches. And what happened in that part of my journey was I began to recognize that there was a certain disconnect that I think people were feeling who were in the business arena, and they did not really see their work as a calling, even though the word vocation is Latin for voice. there was this sort of disconnect. Even though I came to the conclusion that business was one of the best ways to influence change, you know, both in individual lives as well as in communities and even in nations. And so I began to do some consulting work with certain businesses, and that's where I met Jeff Pearsall, who at the time was the CEO of a pretty large nutraceutical company. And he came in, asked me to help his company articulate their values. I did some speaking for him at his seminars, and we began to work more closely together. Then he came to me and asked me to write actually the closing article in one of his business journals. And then as time went on, I encouraged him to launch some business journals in some other markets. He came back to me and he said, Eric, we really want to follow this idea and initiative you have, but we need someone who can drive it. Would you be willing to do that? And I was at a juncture in my life to where I said, you know, I've got to kind of practice what I preach here. I've got to, you know, put some of this desire I have to have a greater influence on the business community to work. And so I resigned from the one position I was in. We launched a magazine called i4Business that targeted the business community across the I-4 corridor in Florida. And then over a period of time, I began to assume responsibility for several of our publications, both the business publications and the lifestyle publications. So that's what it means by, you know, the fact that I'm president of publishing. In other words, I oversee the publishing side of our business. We also do
I love that though, Eric. I have to interrupt you. I mean, you go from pastoring to business to publishing, but you're all about change. And at least that's what I hear in your journey, that you want to change people at different levels, whether they be at the individual, business, or community level. I love it.
Well, I think that any pastor, you know, wants to give their people the tools that help them both navigate their life, as well as, you know, how do I successfully navigate the changes that are inevitable and the changes that I want to bring about in my own particular life? If I'm leading an organization, how do I bring about change in that organization? And of course, in our era, that's becoming more pronounced, as well as being more challenging, because the pace of change has accelerated so much, really, over the last 20 to 25 years. It's been speeding up really for several centuries, but you know, the turbo thrusters have started firing here of late. In fact, I heard one person describe it as, you know, we operate almost in an analog sort of thinking, whereas our culture and our business is moving at a digital pace.
And that's so interesting, because many of my listeners, I know, loved not having change, being stable, knowing what and how to predict what's going to happen tomorrow. So you're saying that change is occurring a lot around us. Listeners, remember that. And especially in the workforce, which is, you know, what motivated you, I think, to write your latest book, Dogs Don't Bark at Parked Cars. Now, can you explain what change you're talking about in that book and the title? You have to share with us where in the world that title came from. Dogs Don't Bark at Parked Cars. I'm trying to see the analogy, so help us.
Okay. Well, you know, that particular title came from actually an incident, a story, and Jeff Pearsall, who is my business partner as well as the co-author of the book. And there was, you know, sort of a big dog in the community, little community that he grew up in, and all the boys that he rode around with on their bicycles would avoid this particular street because of this dog, and it would run out and bark and, you know, scare them and everything. And he decided that he was going to go down this street and he was going to outrun the dog. And so he took off down this street, and the dog came out and it was barking, and he was pedaling with all his might, and he was outrunning the dog. But he slowed down and turned around to look at the dog. And when he did that, the dog jumped up and bit him right on the bum, you know?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it was that idea. If you pay attention to these distractions, if you pay attention to the naysayers, you're never going to accomplish anything, because they're always going to be naysayers, you know? Mm-hmm. And the main principle that we began to identify, and really the reason that we wrote the book, was we realized that the only way that you're going to be able to navigate, you know, the waters of change that are inevitable, it's happening all around us, is you've got to have a certain core set of values. You've got to have a core set of principles that doesn't change. I mean, the only reason a compass works is because it always points to true north. And so you need these things that don't change in order for you to navigate an ever-changing world.
And so that's fascinating. So even though the world and everything is changing around us, if we keep a set of values that don't change, then we're going to be okay in this world of change and hyper-change, as you call it.
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right, because so many times, what it all comes down to is decision making. Leadership is all about making critical decisions, and anyone, whether I'm leading my own life, maybe I'm leading my family, I'm leading an organization, I'm leading a business, regardless of how big it is, it's all about making decisions every day. Now, the more you have a set of core values that you are basing your life on, sometimes the easier it is to make those decisions, because you have this sort of criteria that you say, well, you know, this may seem complicated, but let's simplify it down to, you know, is it the right thing or is it the wrong thing? You know, and if it's the wrong thing, or if it's injurious, or if it if it, you know, is dehumanizing to somebody, then I immediately say, wait a minute, that's an easy decision. I'm not going to take that particular track. You know, this may be profitable to me in the short term, but at the long term, I'm going to sacrifice my essence. I'm going to lose a part of myself, and that is a greater loss. So this decision becomes easy for me. And really, the way we arrived at these was, as a part of our business, we interview hundreds, you know, multiple hundreds, CEOs, entrepreneurs, people that are starting up new businesses, people that are running Fortune 500 companies, and we began to see a pattern. We began to see this common denominator that these people understand.
Wait, Jeff, so Eric, you actually interviewed CEOs and entrepreneurs, and that's the basis of this book. I love it. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely correct. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what we've done. I've done for 12 years is, you know, identifying business leaders. They may be men, they may be women, they may be in publicly traded companies, they may be privately held companies, they may be family businesses. It didn't matter. I mean, because we covered the gamut of business, you know, through our journals. And what happened was Jeff and I began to look at these individuals, look at the material we were gathering from them, and we begin to see patterns. We begin
and
to
what
see
what are okay, those
these
patterns
people
then? That's great. What is the mindset or the core values that today's leaders need or have to address when the world around them and is changing?
Right, right. Well, and there are certain ones, and I know you can relate to them, like the first one we identify is a foundation of trust. You know, we said you don't see a building's foundation. You only see if it's flawed. I mean, the reason the Leaning Tower of Pisa is famous is not because of the design of the tower. It's because the foundation was flawed. And that's the way people are as well. You know, there is a foundation under us, and nobody goes to Europe to look at the foundations of buildings. They go to look at the, you know, the towers and the flying buttresses, et cetera. But the foundation determines how big the building's going to be and how long the building's going to last. And what we discovered was that the successful leader is able to inspire trust in people.
And what does that mean? Give us an example of how a leader might do that.
Well, there's a number of things that a leader can do in order to do it. And you see it all the time. You know, just simple things like, well, I'm not going to change the rules. All right. Why do people get upset at an umpire at a baseball game? It's not because they don't like the strike zone. It's because they feel like he's calling balls and strikes differently. So If I'm a leader and I want to inspire trust in my people, then I've got to keep my strike zone consistent. You know, we say we trust our brakes. Why? Because every time we press on the brake pedal, my car comes to a stop. The moment it doesn't do that, or there's some sort of delay, or there's some sort of glitch, hey, I immediately am going to get in touch with my mechanic. So this idea of reliability, this idea of consistency, this idea that, hey, you know, I might not agree with, you know, the way Eric handles this, but I know he's always going to handle it the same way. So I can.
Oh, yes, I like that, Eric, because that's the foundation of any interpersonal relationship as well. I am consistently talking to clients and others saying trust is the foundation of a romantic relationship, of a peer relationship, friendship, parent-child relationship. And what is that? It's predictability. It's consistency that I can rely on you to behave or act the same way. And so before you can have love and commitment and all kinds of other things that people want in a relationship, you need to have trust. So you're talking about that same foundational skill in a leader in a business.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, I've been married for over 35 years. And when I can tell you when you know, maybe I've you know, made an investment or something that didn't go the way I wanted to, and my wife's confidence in me erodes a little bit, well, you know, I feel that throughout the relationship. And let's face it, when we trust somebody, everything speeds up. I mean, if you and I, if I go to you and I say, hey, I'm going to be starting this business, and I'd love for you to invest. And every single investment that you have made in one of my enterprises has you know, brought you incredible returns. Well, you don't even have to do any due diligence. You just trust in me. And if I bring the opportunity to you because you trust in me, boom, you know, the check is written. If you don't trust me, then what's going to happen? You're going to go through all kinds of due diligence. You're going to call in the lawyers. You're going to call in the accountants. You're going to call in the subject matter experts and all this kind of stuff. Why? Because you're not sure, because you don't mm-hmm. trust. But where there is trust, the pace speeds up.
Absolutely. Trust, and that's at true the beginning of down. A relationship, in the middle, gosh, yes. wherever you are in your relationship. And I love that it's also an important skill that you're saying leaders need to have in order to be effective. So engendering trust. Give us another skill then, Eric, that leaders need in terms of this hyper change era.
Well, another one, and I'm just pulling one out, is we have to embrace diverse perspectives. None of us are subject matter experts about everything, nor do any of us have unique abilities that are going to cover the gamut of what is involved in a successful business. As a business grows, the business becomes more complex. As it becomes more complex, you need more people who are involved. So one of the things that we recognized and identified was that people who are successful in scaling business, they embrace diverse perspectives. And they understand that the person that I put here, you know, to do this role has got to have a certain set of skill sets, and the person that I put over here has to have a completely different set of skill sets. I tell people, you know, down at on the Miami Dolphins, they've got a defensive lineman, Ndamukong Suh. He's a great player. And up in New England, they've got Tom Brady. But you wouldn't want Tom Brady playing Ndamukong Suh's role, nor would you want, you know, Ndamukong Suh playing Tom Brady's role. They're completely different. They're designed differently. And so in order to be successful, what you have to do is you have to embrace that diversity, that uniqueness that's a part of everyone. And you know, your allusions or your references to relationships, well, that's something that you've got to do in your own children. I have right. three sons. They're all grown. But boy, each one of them is so different. Each one of them is so unique. And as a parent who wants to be involved in their lives, I have to celebrate who they are, not try to force them to be what I want them to be. And this is something that also happens in business. You got a role to fill, so you're trying to squeeze somebody to fulfill a role that they're not really designed for, that they're not really made for. Can they do it? I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do, but do they love it? Do they flourish when they're doing it? Is it feeding something in them, or is it draining them out?
And, oh, I love so it. I just love it. I mean, part you could be talking about, you know, improving a romantic relationship or strengthening a parent-child relationship. Appreciating somebody's unique strengths and gifts is so important, not only for that relationship, but that individual, them flourishing and developing and growing over time. And that's such an important skill. And what you're saying is that leaders in big businesses, small businesses, two partner businesses need to embrace that perspective, that diverse perspectives are good, right?
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, here's another thing, and you know, that I learned about my wife. The things that reinforce my love for my wife mm-hmm. are not the same things that reinforce her love for me. I'm different.
You know? That's good.
You know, my wife, yeah, I can define the most valuable thing to my wife, and it would not be a $500 bottle of perfume. It would not be a $50,000 automobile. It would be time. I would give her the gift of time. I would give her undistracted attention. I would talk to her about whatever is of interest to her. That's you know, what we used to call her love language. You know,
exactly. Did you read Five Love Languages? It sounds a lot like
many times.
But it's so true.
And the same thing with
men. Understanding a partner's perspective is so important in order to understand them and for the relationship to work.
Well, and one of the things that you know, we talked about change. One of the things we realize is that what may be meaningful to a baby boomer might not be as meaningful to a millennial or someone younger. You know, someone younger might put more value on having a flexible schedule. They might put more value on having creative time. They might put more value on, you know, interpersonal communication within the office. It's identifying how unique people are in creating opportunities in a work environment that plays to their strengths, that plays to what sort of puts fuel in their engine versus what drains their engine out. And it's an art. It's not a science. There's a scientific dimension of it, but it's an art to mm-hmm. learn how to do that, to identify those things, and to make sure that you're bringing all of your resources to bear on those things.
I love it. And I think that writing this book, you know, bridges sort of relationships and relational skills to the business world. Now, how do you think that technological advances in our world around us are making these relational skills in the business world more important in terms of an effective leadership style?
I think that is an excellent question because we see it all the time. What we have observed is that technology is great at what I would call transactional business. If I want to book a flight, if I want to book a hotel, you know, if I want, you know, an Uber driver to come pick me up at my hotel, wherever I might happen to be, those kind of things technology does in an incredible way. I mean, I think all of us, you know, are stunned by how easy and simple technology makes us. What we have to realize is when there is a breakdown, when those technologies fail us, then we're looking for a human relationship to solve it. I'll give you an example. I have a son that lives in Taiwan with his wife and young daughter. We were going to meet them in South Vietnam. We were going to, you know, both of us were going to fly to Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, and we're going to meet there and have a 10-day vacation together. So my wife and I, we booked our flights very early and got an excellent rate on this flight. I live on the east coast of Florida, you know, so, you know, it's a long way to go, and I wanted to get the best deal I could possibly get. 3 weeks before we were ready to go, I went back online in order to book my actual seat. And when I got in touch with the airline, they said, "Oh, your reservation has been canceled." And I said, "What do you mean my reservation has been canceled? I leave in 3 weeks. How can this happen?" And so then I went back to the online service where I had booked the actual flight. And you know what I wanted? I wanted to talk to a person.
Right.
You know, they push one, push two, you know, go write something on our website or something. I didn't want any of that. I wanted to talk to a human being. Because
and so
nobody
when things fail technologically, we need somebody to talk to. We need to interact with a person, a human. Now, Eric, I love what you're talking about. We only have 1 minute left.
Okay.
Can you just tell listeners then where they can find your book and how it can improve their lives and be effective leaders?
You know, I'm going to start with the last question first. I think this book applies to any leader at any level. The other thing that I have found business leaders doing, they have been giving it to their high school graduates and their college graduates' children, saying, look, this is what you need to understand about soft skills. You know, you'll get hired for your hard skills, the things that you're learning at college, but you'll keep the job or get fired for your lack of soft skills. And these are the soft skills you need in order to succeed.
Excellent. So these soft skills are so important, not only for when you're in business, but for children, for adolescents, for young adults. I'm so sorry, Eric. We're all out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me today. What a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, nice talking to you too, Terry. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Excellent. I love our flow. And listeners, if you want to connect with Eric Wright or learn more about his book, Dogs Don't Bark at Parked Cars, Your GPS in an Era of Hyperchange, go to dogsdontbark.com. And Eric is also on Facebook and on LinkedIn, Eric Wright. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help your relationships be the best they can be. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.